Another year has come and gone. Are you wondering what the future holds? Are you struggling with the decision about love, money, your career, your family? StarPsychics.com, that stars with a Z, has the answers you desire. StarPsychics.com is the best and brightest advisor site on the internet, staffed by top-rated, professional, fully tested, and certified advisors. This is the real deal. At StarPsychics.com, you create your own personal account, and you pick your advisor by reading their extensive bios. Then you decide on a budget that you are comfortable with. Your pathway to a clearer and brighter future is just a few clicks away. No gimmicks, no bait and switch. StarPsychics.com has daily blogs and lots of links to help you develop your own intuition. Log on now. That's StarPsychics.com. Remember, stars with a Z. And here's the best part. They're available 24/7. StarPsychics.com. Remember, stars with a Z. You must be 18 years or older. Your future awaits.
Hi, everybody. This is Natalie, also known as Stars Cast. And, of course, I always run a commercial for Star Psychics, even just because I do that, and also my magazine, mysticlivingtoday.com. What I want to talk to you about today is that we have a lot of things going on and about to happen on stars. Everybody knows from all the ads and everything that I've got my own tarot cards ready to go. They're at the printer right now. We're getting more proofs, and that will be going, and we have an audio course that will go right along with it if you would like to get that. But other than that, I want everybody to know that stars is a place of value. I got that this morning. I was talking to somebody, and then I pulled away from her, and I thought, what is it about it? What sets us apart? And it's the value. It's value. When you go other places, maybe you're not getting value. Maybe you're getting better prices. I don't know. But you need to give stars a try. My magazine just went up, mysticlivingtoday.com. It's a nice issue. I've got a lot of good things. A lot of the same people always contribute to it. My regulars, I call them, my regular writers. And my gal, my designer, and I are probably sometime in January going to start to do the flip magazine, so it'll be a flip e-zine. In other words, you'll be able to turn the pages when you go to the site. It's so cool, and we're excited to do it because it'll give me more. I have a better advantage. I'll be able to put more in. I'll be able to expand if I want. I mean, I can do it on the one right now, and I've had that one probably, I'd have to say, about 10 years it's been like this. I had my guy, Tony, you know, revamp it and everything. But it's got a lot of good stuff in there. You should go and read the articles. That's mysticlivingtoday.com. If you have something that you would like to send to me, just send it to stars with a Z, C-A-S-T like in Tom, at mysticlivingtoday.com. And all I need is an image that you own. Now, if you go on Google, people think, oh, it's there for free. No, it's not. Trust me, it belongs to somebody down the road, in the back. Somebody created this, and then somebody took it, and somebody took it. You can't do it that way. So what I do is I advise people to go where I go, and it's called depositphotos.com. I have an account there. I have a license, and I don't have to worry about copyright or anything like that. I have the license to use them, so that's really good. Stars has we have still the $10, 10 minutes for $10, but I am taking it off the main. It'll be in the rates. You'll be able to see that. But there's so many new things coming to Stars, and just like shining in the sky, you know, just like a star up there. And the man that I'm going to talk to today, he gets it. I'm going to tell you that right now. He knows. He knows what it's all about, and he's probably thinking, this Natalie is really something. I bet she's smiling because he knows what I'm about, and I'm about life and doing good in the world and bringing good stuff out, and it's not about the money for me. So without further ado, I'm going to bring in my guest today, and his name is Rabbi Rami M. Shapiro, and yes, he is a rabbi. Welcome, Rabbi. How are you?
I'm fine, Natalie. How are you doing?
Good. Were you smiling when I was talking?
I was smiling, and I want to derail our conversation right from the beginning, if I could take just a couple of minutes and turn the tables. I'm very interested in tarot, and while you were talking, I didn't know you were doing this. So I went online to try to get a look at your deck, but I couldn't.
Well, no, you have to go to the site and click on the image. There's an image on the right, and you click on that. The cards are in the print at the printer. You won't see the whole deck, but you will see what they look like. Yes, go there, starpsychics.com.
I did that. So I did that. So I get a little bit. They're very beautiful. So,
thank you.
I do a podcast for Spirituality Health Magazine, so I'm used to being the interviewer as well as the interviewee. So quickly, what makes your deck different, and how did you come up with the artwork, and who did you work
with? Okay, that's a good question, and I so appreciate that question. Well, I'll tell you, I've had this deck for about 3 years. I contacted somebody on a place called Freelance, and my webmaster and I found an artist. She was in Spain. I mean, I went through a lot of them. What I wanted with the deck was I wanted the deck to be different like everybody else, than everybody else's. I wanted them to be beautiful. I wanted them to make you feel good when you looked at them. And I had a heck of a time with her because she kept wanting to do dark colors. I said, no. She's from Spain. I said, no, Alejandra, no. I want them nice. I want you to feel good when you look at them. I want you to feel good when you hold them. Oh, so it took me a year and a half with her to get them to where I really like them, and it's taken us another year to get them tweaked, and then I have a designer in Africa, believe it or not, and she has helped me. You know, there's little things that you have to do. But the idea was there a really long time ago, and I do regular playing cards. I don't do tarot. I mean, I know how to do them, but that's not my area of expertise. And so my son said to me, why don't you do your cards? Because people love tarot. Maybe someday I'll do them, my own deck. I have my own way of reading, and I've done it since I worked for America Online back in the 90s. But this deck is going to make you feel good. And the interpretations, I had a lady that's been with me for years. I pulled in all of my resources. I had to get some people that really knew tarot. I mean, you can look at a card, and you know this probably. You can look at a card, and you can see what the picture is. You know, if the person's sitting on a horse, it seems to me that's going to be travel or news. I mean, it's not that difficult to read them, but you have to have experience. And so I'll have the deck, and I'll have an online course that you can get, audio, or you don't even have to get the audio. And that's pretty much how they came to be. It was just kind of fell into place. You know the word divine order. You know those words. Well, it was like I kept getting nudged and nudged. Okay, why don't you try to do these? Well, it took a long time. Trust me, it took several years. They just didn't happen overnight. And finally, I think today, the final work, I mean, I have proofs of the cards, but we have to do the booklet that goes with it. You have to make sure the interpretations are right. You have to, the reverse and the upright. So that's basically how it all came to be for me. I mean, it was in my head a long time. I just, but what makes them different? First of all, they're coming from me. Those are my colors. That's the feel of the cards. And when you get a deck, you're not just going to get the deck of cards. Like, you'll get a deck of cards, and that's all you get. I'm going to have a little bag of nice things in there for you because I feel that they're special, and you should get special things. But that's how I treat everybody. I really, really do. So we'll see what happens. I mean,
yeah,
nothing ventured, nothing gained.
They look beautiful. Good luck.
Thank you. Thank you. Everybody loves the colors. They're vibrant. Wait till you see what this company did. I went through a lot of them. And this one gentleman that's a graphic designer over there, he said, I'm on standby. You get it, I'll do it. And I have the proofs usually by the afternoon. I have them all except for the instruction booklet. And the cover is going to be a pretty blue, but then the instruction booklet is going to be white, you know, of course. But it's going to have colored images in it about contact. It's just, I'm so happy and pleased with them. You probably can hear it in my voice. It's all coming together. And that makes me feel good that you really love that they're very colorful and you like them. I like that. That's awesome. Thank you.
Yeah, they look fantastic. Good luck with this project.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, they're going to be everywhere. Trust me. Anyways, let's get on with you.
Okay,
now,
back to me.
Back to you. Back to the stuff at hand here. Okay, so tell me something. How did you get started? What was the road like for you? Because I ask that of everybody, because people, it's just like becoming a pastor or a nun. I mean, did you wake up one day and say, I think I want to do this? How did it happen?
You mean becoming a rabbi?
Yeah, just the spiritual path that you're on, and you've written so many books. Oh, my goodness.
Well, I wanted to be a writer since seventh grade. I just knew that. But my intent was not to become a rabbi. I grew up in an Orthodox Jewish home, and by the time I was engaged in my bar mitzvah training, I knew I was growing out of Judaism, not growing into it. And by the time I was in high school, I was intrigued with Buddhism. And that was my long-term plan, was to graduate from high school and study Buddhism at university, get an undergraduate degree, go on to graduate school. As I pursued my undergraduate degree, I was, oh, I don't know, I came across through a professor, this wonderful Zen teacher, Zen Roshi, Zen master, Joshu Suzaki Roshi. He had all kinds of personal problems, but when it came to teaching Zen, I found him very, very insightful, very helpful. And near the end of my undergraduate work, I was preparing for grad school, and he came to me and said that was a mistake. And he said, don't go to graduate school, go to the monastery, move into his monastery, learn Japanese from him, and, you know, become a Zen Buddhist monk. And I don't know what it was about his offer, but it just triggered this response in me without any thinking at all. I simply said, Boshi, I can't do that. I'm going to become a rabbi. And that was not on my to-do list. I had no intention of becoming a rabbi, but that's what I said. I'm going to become a rabbi. And his response just as quickly was, good. You know, he was Japanese. He said it with a heavy Japanese accent, but he said, good, be a rabbi, be a Zen rabbi. And I said, okay, I'll be a Zen rabbi, whatever that is. And that's how I ended up, you know, focused. You know, it was my Zen master who sent me, you know, along the path of being a rabbi. And you know, I went to mainstream rabbinical training, but I was always interested in the mystical side of things, and I always kept my Buddhist studies up, and then I expanded into Hinduism, and, you know, I'm just interested in religious studies in general, and especially the mystic side of things.
Yeah. See, so that's what's so fascinating about you, because I, you know, I was born and raised a Catholic. Okay, I was baptized a Greek Catholic, and but I'll tell you something, and you can put this in your wisdom there. When I was ready, I was a little girl. They didn't want to baptize me for one thing, but they did. And my dad said, I thought the pillars were going to fall over because, oh my, this is awful. She's, you know, she really wants to go into be a Roman Catholic, and she's, and I have, we have to do this. But they baptized me. But then when it came to go to the Catholic Church, they didn't want me to take my sacraments. This is how, I don't even know what the word is, that they were just stuck in it. My mother had to go and argue with the pastor. I heard her, and I thought, oh, I'm never going to get my sacraments now. Listen to my mother ranting and raving about, well, so what? She was baptized a Greek Catholic. Who cares? And that's what she told him. Well, no, you know, we cannot have that. Anyways, I got it, and I don't – I think she was so persistent. But I had all the sacraments, Rabbi, and I – went into church. We would go to church every day before school in high school and on Sundays, of course. And I almost felt brainwashed even then at 8 years old, because I'd look around and I'd say, why do I have to be here to pray? I mean, can I be heard anywhere? You know what I'm saying? And I think a lot of people question that. Why do I have to go into this building with that reeks of all this gold? That's the thing that got me, was the gold, the money. It represented money. Well, I ended up, you know, I mean, I took everything. I was married in the Catholic Church and all of that, and it was okay. But I still question that. That when I was a really young girl, you know, a little girl, really, why I had to do all of this. It was, you know, I think now, think back now that, you know, it was wrong. What they did to some of us, and probably many of us did not continue with our faith. I have continued with my faith. I believe in all that, and I believe in things you cannot see. They really are there. That's how I end my shows all the time. Because, and I don't know where it came from. Maybe it came from my background. I don't know, because it started me on the path, like, you know. But I started seeking. I mean, I've had monks on my show, and they tell me what they've gone through. I mean, I've had all walks of life on my show. You're probably number close to 300 that I've done. And so you know that I've had a lot of people that I've talked to. But everybody kind of seems to feel the same way. I mean, was that wrong of me as a little girl to question? I don't think it was wrong. I think it was good, actually. My mind was working. I was thinking. I was a thinking little girl, you know?
Yeah, well, I think one of the things that religion in general, religion doesn't like thinking. I mean, that's
yeah.
not what most religions are about. I mean, they'll allow you to think and to question within a certain parameter, but you can't challenge the core beliefs, because then once you question, you know, regardless of what the religion is, but once you question its core tenets to the point of rejecting them, then the religion has no power over you. And if it has no power, it can't control you, and it can't get any, you know, if you talk about money, it can't get any money out of you.
That's right.
And religion, by and large, and I'm talking about mainstream religion, regardless of the name, the brand, what mainstream religion is about power and control and often money.
Yeah.
So, you know, it runs on fear. I mean, this is more true of conservative religions than liberal ones, but still. There's
yeah.
a belief that,
oh gosh,
that,
if I don't do this, something's going
to
happen to me. If I don't do,
yeah,
you're right.
Right.
Fear is powerful. It really is.
Yeah. Right.
Very powerful.
And it's all. I mean, you know, I don't. I mean, I'm Jewish, and I find a lot of value in Judaism, but I'm not a believer in the sense that I don't take any of it literally. I think it's metaphor and, you know, myth. And, you know, I don't believe there's a God out there somewhere who chose the Jewish people, or who incarnated as Jesus or as Krishna, or
mm-hmm.
you know, any of these any claim that's made about God is invented by people. So, you know, any of these brand name deities are just human constructs. And I'm curious about them. I mean, I have a degree in religious studies, so they fascinate me. But personally, I'm not invested in them as actual beings. They're metaphors. They represent something in the human psyche. That doesn't mean there is not an absolute reality, but that reality is beyond our conception. You know, it's the opening line of the Tao Te Ching. Lao Tzu says, the Tao that can be named is not the eternal Tao. You know, if you can name it, it's not it. If you can conceive of it, then what you're conceiving of is just a figment of your imagination. And whatever that reality is, it's beyond our conception.
Oh, a lot of people have lost their way, I think. They question everything, and they're so, I've noticed this in people, they want to speak their mind, and most times they don't even know what they're talking about, but they have, maybe it was because they were all locked up, I shouldn't say locked up, but because of COVID, and just because their way of life changed, and they harbored all of this stuff, oh, I'm going to do this, and I'm going to say this, sometimes it's better not to say anything. Just listen. Just listen and learn, you know. I have some questions here. First of all, what exactly is contemporary spirituality?
I don't know what the difference between contemporary spirituality and
I mean regular. I think it means regular, like, you know, the what spirituality to you is what? What does it mean to you? Let's put it that way.
Spirituality to me is practice. Not a feeling. It's not an idea. Spirituality is practice, and the practice is whatever gets you beyond your assumptions about reality, beyond your egoic sense of self, whatever erases your sense of separate being and awakens you to the larger reality of which all things are a part. That to me is spirituality. It has no adjective. You know,
and two, it's something about, you know, I always think of the soul, and I always think of the inner part of you. It's not the exterior. I can look at you, and I could probably figure out about you, but that's because it's me. But, I mean, regular people, you really don't know what's inside. You know, it gets to be, well, I'm not really sure, you know. But I don't know. I just wish people would follow something to give them guidance, because there's too many out there floundering around. I mean, I'm in the South, and I was born and raised in Michigan. So it's completely different up there. It was completely different up there than it is down here. I mean, it's more like the Bible Belt I'm starting in right down here. It's not like that in Michigan. It's a little bit more stern and it's this way or that way. That's it. There's no in between. But I wish people would look more into themselves to find out what is really going on and listen. Just please listen. There are things you're being shown. Your feelings, what you should be doing. But that's just my take. You've written so many books. I mean, I am so in awe. I really, really am. It's really funny, and I'm going to tell you this, but I have a fairy tale I want to finish, and I'm having a terrible time. But you can see I'm about whimsical, and I'm about things that you can't really see, but I know they're there. I'm very spiritual. I mean, I'm open to everything, and I talk to so many different kinds of people. I have not had anybody on my show that I ever actually ended up arguing with. And I wouldn't do that anyways. But tell me something about your latest book was Surrendered, Shattering the Illusion of Control and Falling Grace with 12-Step Spirituality. What is 12-Step Spirituality to you?
So, you know, I'm in a 12-Step program. I'm in Overeaters Anonymous. You know, in any 12-Step program, there's the assumption that I am powerless over my addiction, and which is true, that my egoic self is powerless. And so the way we talk about these things in 12-step is that I turn my addiction over to most people say a higher power. I don't use that terminology. That's not the terminology that Bill Wilson uses in the big book. He talks about a greater power, and I like that better. Higher sounds like a hierarchy, someone's in control. Greater just means there's something larger of which I am a part. And the idea is when I'm surrendered to this greater reality, I'm no longer struggling with my addiction. I still have the craving, but I'm not approaching the craving from my ego. When I approach my craving for food from the ego, I always eat. When I'm a witness to the craving from the higher or the greater reality, I can just witness it. And so the spirituality, and you can go beyond 12-step, but for me, 12-step spirituality is the practice of shifting from the narrow egoic consciousness to the greater divine consciousness and being able to witness the wildness of life without trying to control it, because you can't control it. And
no.
realizing you can't control any of it.
Then, that's so true.
Yeah. Then you can just observe it, and then without getting caught up. So, you know, so I work out of my home, and just outside my office is my kitchen, and in the kitchen is all kinds of stuff that I should not eat, but my wife can eat it. It doesn't bother her at all. So there are times during the day when I am, you know, I feel the call of the refrigerator, you know, and if I go over to the refrigerator, I can open the refrigerator door, and I can have this amazing argument with myself. Eat this or don't eat this. Oh, you should eat it because you've been working hard all day, or don't eat it. It's bad for you. And, you know, you could just go back and forth and back and forth. And
I do
if
that.
I get involved in that argument, you know, if I do that, I always end up eating. And then I feel terrible about it, so I eat more because what the hell? I've already eaten, you know, one whatever it is. I might as well eat the whole box.
Right.
So,
funny.
If I stand in the greater consciousness and I just watch the argument, I actually can just walk away from it. The argument's still going on. The craving hasn't disappeared, but I'm no longer involved in it. So. That's 12-step spirituality. It's just this liberation from the madness of the craving. But then
people are going to listen to this and relate to standing at the refrigerator, especially those who are trying to lose weight. I mean, I'm very small. I've always been small all my life. I've never had a weight problem. But my late husband always said I was so disciplined. I don't know if it was that. I don't really know. It was just, it wasn't that important. You know, I think I put importance on other things. I was an only child, so I was home alone a lot. Even my friends across the street, I didn't even see them all the time. They just didn't bother with me, and I know why. I know why. It wasn't because I was outspoken. I could have been, but I really wasn't. It's that I didn't see things the way they did. You know, as a little girl, my dad would take me to the airport, Detroit City Airport, to watch the planes land and take off. And my friends would say, well, why do you want to do that on a Saturday? Don't you want to play with dolls? And I remember saying to my friend, dolls are not real. Planes are. And so probably that set the path for me. They probably think, oh, okay, she's just way over there in the left field somewhere. But it was true, and I've always had a desire to fly. But I learned so much. And the dolls, that wasn't that important to me. So I think at a young age, I think we kind of like, if maybe call it a strong personality, I don't know that I was. I was very quiet. I was shy. Everybody thought I was. Quiet, I could be quiet, but I could also rule the neighborhood if I wanted to, but I didn't do that either. You know, I was kind of contained. I was a different kind of a little girl, and I look back and I realize it, you know. But temptation will do that to you if you allow it. And so it's almost like you have to step out of that field and look at it differently, like the refrigerator.
Yeah, the key is to step out. Right, the key is to step out. It's not about discipline.
You have to step out. Okay, well, I'll look at it as a whole picture here, not just the refrigerator that has food in it. You have to step away and out of it. You have to do that because if you don't do that.
Discipline.
There you go.
Yeah,
that's
discipline is all about the ego.
That's why he always said, you're so disciplined, I can't believe it. I am, and I'm trying to think of things that really trigger me. I feed deer at night. I love animals. I feed mallards. I'm just like crazy over the edge with animals and love. And I'm in a place where it's possible for me. But I think you have to be disciplined to do things like that, because you could say, oh, they'll be fine without me. I don't think of it that way. They are out there waiting for me. No, that's part of something that I must do and I want to do because I love them so much. And I know they love me. I really do.
Yeah,
you know, go ahead.
No, I say that's not discipline. I mean, discipline is you don't want to do it and you force yourself to do it. If you're doing it out of love, that's not discipline.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
That's grace. That's,
yeah, I do.
Right?
I do,
so
and
discipline is forced, and you're not talking about being forced.
Yeah, you have to make yourself not do it. Nope, not going to do it. Nope. But that's not me. But I don't know about everybody else. I really can't say. But it's okay. You know, I like who I am. Now, you have a book coming out called The Gospel of Sophia. What is that about Sophia?
Yeah, Sophia is a Greek word for wisdom. In the Bible, the Hebrew Bible, the word is chokhmah, same thing, wisdom. When it's translated into Greek, it comes out as Sophia. I have, for decades, I have had encounters. I don't believe God is a person. I don't believe, like I said, I don't believe in any of the named gods like Krishna but I do believe that people can have encounters with the nameless that, for whatever reason, take form for them. People need not only the unformed absolute, but they need to engage with the absolute in some form or another. And for me, and it wasn't a choice, it was just, I guess I psychologically needed it. But for me, the form that began to appear to me was the form of the Divine Mother. And she takes many forms, Mary in the Christian
mm-hmm.
setting, Kali in mm-hmm. the Hindu setting, Saraswati in a lot of forms of Hinduism, Kali, Saraswati, Durga, Shakti. And in Judaism, she's Shekhinah, the presence of God. She's Chokhmah, the divine wisdom. And Sophia is in Greek, another word for wisdom. So the Gospel of Sophia is, it's easier to explain if I give it a quick story. I was giving a lecture at some retreat center in Boulder, Colorado, and I was out to dinner with some of the students, and someone asked me, what's your next book? And I said, just like I said to the Zen master, I'm going to be a rabbi, I said, without any forethought, the Gospel of Sophia. And they said, what is that? And I said, I don't know. I never heard of it before. But then over the coming mm-hmm. weeks, I began to hear from Sophia explained to me in dream and in other settings what this book was to be. And what it is an anthology of primarily first-person texts from her that appear in different religious traditions where she talks about who she is and what she does and how you might tap into her, how you might meet her. So the book is not published yet.
No, I know that, yeah.
I don't plan to bring it out commercially. My plan is when it's finished, my plan is to bring it out probably through Amazon and not sell it, just let people download it. Because it sort of came to me through her, and I would just let it come to other people through her without any kind of commercial.
Yeah, without any monetary attachment to it.
Yeah,
I have a gentleman that writes for my magazine. He's doing the same thing. He's a Nostradamus aficionado. I mean, that's his thing. Okay, so he writes beautiful work. He's not good with his spelling, so I have to fix it all the time. But I said, why do you want to do this? He said, because I want people to learn, even if they can't buy something, like say, and they don't feel like, they're not going to learn from it. He said, so I want to do that. It's a gift, you know, and kind of that's what you're doing, is it's a gift. You're giving people a chance when maybe otherwise they would not even, it looks like a decent book, but I don't want to buy it, right? So you're giving them something.
Yeah, I mean, the alternative, you can say, is people won't take it seriously if they don't pay money for it. So who knows? But in this case, the way I understand it at the moment is, and it's still got a lot of work to do because, the book is done, but I have to go back to the graphic designer and just go through it one more time. And there's graphic design errors that have to be corrected. And when all that's done, then I have someone who does books on Kindle, and I'll give it to her and pay to have her, you know, put it through the process. But I mean, I've published 36 books, so I've got a lot of
commercial books out there. I see them. I've got them all printed out in front of me. Yes, you've done so much.
This will be a different kind of process.
I don't know. I have to ask you this. How does one continue to write book after book after book like you? How? Do you just sit down and say, okay, there's another book in me. I'm going to do this. I'm going to write about this because I'm supposed to. Is that what you get, that you're supposed to? Or I'm just curious. I'm kind of trying to get into the writing part of you for people who might be writing out there.
Yeah, there is that supposed to element. Something arises, and then I sit down. I don't want to overstate this. But I'm sort of a typist more than a writer, you know? I mean, the first draft just happens. And sometimes it happens painfully. I don't even know what's going on. But the fun of writing a book for me is the dozens of dozens of drafts I do after the first draft is done. The first draft, I don't know where it comes from. So, for example, I'm working on a book now called One Foot Judaism. It's from a story in the Talmud, which is a 2,000 almost year old anthology of rabbinic law and lore and traditions, teachings. And there's a story about these two rabbis who were the chief rabbis of their time. And this Roman soldier went to one of them and he says, teach me the entire Torah, which that's shorthand for the entirety of Judaism, while I stand on one foot. And the first rabbi was incensed. I mean, it's just a stupid, you know, it's a 1,000-year-old tradition. 2,000 years ago, it was already 1,000 years old. And so the guy said, you know, basically said, screw you, and chased the guy away. And then he goes to this other rabbi named Hillel, and he says the same thing. Teach me the entire Torah while I stand on one foot. And Hillel says to him, that which is hateful to you, don't do to anybody else. That's the entire Torah. Everything else is commentary. Go study the commentary. And the guy converts. So it's a story that almost every Jew has heard at least once. And usually the idea when you hear the story is they tell you, okay, so now go study the commentary, which is all the laws and teachings. But I was talking to my agent one day, last year, I guess, and we were talking about the story, and I said, for me, what I hear in the story is what I call one-foot Judaism, which is the notion that Judaism is, in fact, the golden rule, as Hillel puts it, which is in the negative, that which is hateful to you, don't do to anybody else. All the rest of it, all the holidays, all the traditions, all the laws, are commentary on the golden rule, which means they're ways of living the golden rule, or if they're not, they're not authentically Jewish. And then my agent said, oh, my God, that is a great book, but it has to be really short because it's 1 foot. You have to, you know, the whole idea is you have to be able to do it while you're standing on 1 foot. So I was totally captivated by his enthusiasm. And I wrote the first draft, you know, standing on 1 foot really quick. And then I've been rewriting it and rewriting it and rewriting it for months, trying to make it shorter and shorter and shorter to get to the kernel of what it's about. So the first draft just came. I mean, the idea just came from a conversation, and the first draft just flowed. And now I'm cleaning it up. It takes months. But it's fun. I mean, that's what I love to do.
Well, you know, I mean, people say, oh, you want to write a fairy tale. Well, actually, it's not. It is and it isn't. It's not like your traditional. It's actually a real story. But the only way that I can tell it is to make people think it's made up. but it's really not made up. But you know, I'm pulled in so many directions. I have three websites. I have two that are really working ones, the magazine and my stars, and then I want to do my magazine in a flip so that you can actually turn the pages. That's next for myself sometime, maybe spring, I don't know. I got to get all these cards and everything running and all of that. But, you know, you do so many things. It's really, you almost have to sit down and say, okay, I'm not going to do anything else. I mean, I have started it. But actually, it's probably my life. I'm telling the story of my life. But for me to do it, I have to make it into something that's almost like a fairy tale. Like, really? How could that have happened? Well, it goes back to what I always say: believe in things you cannot see. They really are there. And if you and it's a belief system, and it's so I get maybe one day, you know, somebody said, well, when you're ready, and I've talked to so many authors, you know, well, just sit down and do it. But I can't because I get pulled away from so many things. You know, I have people that work on the site, and then I have my magazine that's I got to go back and forth with the publicists and the authors. Like, you know, that's just what happens to me. You know, you can't, like Sarah.
No, when you're ready to write it, you'll sit down and
yeah,
write it.
Like but, Sarah. But I've known Sarah for years. And
there's
a lot like what?
There's a lot to be said for putting it in a story format.
It is.
There's a practice that I teach. One of the things that in Judaism that you're encouraged to do when you're older, you know, I mean, like I'm in my 70s, so when you're older like that. You start to write what's called an ethical will. And so, you know, like you write a will, you know, you give your whatever stuff you got away. But this is an ethical will where you write, these are the important teachings of my life that I learned, and you write them down for your kids or your grandkids or whatever, you know, nieces and nephews. And I find the best way to do that is by putting them in a story form. And when I teach the practice, I tell people, don't write about yourself. I mean, they're your stories, but make a character out of yourself. You can use your name, but don't, you know, so it's, make up little Natalie, and then tell the story about Natalie, but it's a character.
Yeah, nobody would really know, and it's really not about me. It is in a way. But it isn't. So, no, I get what you're saying. Yes, I get what you're saying because you're not going to I don't think people would like to know about what little Natalie was like. Oh, I was something.
But it frees you to make the point you want to make
without
having to get lost in the weeds of, you know, the details of your biography.
Right. Yeah, you don't want it. I don't want it to be a biography. I want it to be something that people are going to learn from, and I want to show younger people, smaller people, 8, 9, 10, 11, that things like this are okay and things like this do really happen. And the big thing for me is to believe. I really do. I almost died a couple of times. I had a near-fatal accident, and somebody turned the wheel. My son and I think it was probably an angel. I had a visitation when I almost died. I have seen things. I know it's real. And it doesn't have to be associated with God, quote-unquote. It just happened. You know, it's just Jesus came to me when I was taking care of my husband because he tried to kill me every day. And a friend of mine said to me, you know, because it was 12, 14 months of terror for me. And she said to me, you know what? She says, I think God or whoever just said, okay, enough is enough. It's over. It's done. You've done enough. And then that's exactly what happened. And I have the greatest belief system. And I can't say Rabbi, it was from being a Catholic. I don't know that it has anything to do with that. I really don't. Maybe it does. Maybe it sets a pace with me, I guess. I don't know.
Here's some free advice. Take it or leave it, Natalie. But if you've got these, I mean, they're really short stories. They're not, this is not a novel. If you've got a bunch of these, contact the woman who did the drawings for the tarot cards.
Yeah.
And see if you can create little children's books. You know,
yeah,
minimal
actually,
amount of
I have another designer. She's too hard to get a hold of. She's in Spain, and
well,
she disappeared.
You know what I mean.
And
find an illustrator.
Yeah, yeah. I have one. I do have one. Yeah. Yeah. No, that's true. Children's books, because that's really what they are. You're right. You're absolutely right. It's little stories that I can show.
You only have 12, 15 words to a page, and then the picture carries a lot of it. And then you can do one at a time and put them out separately. I don't know. I've never done a children's book, but I've always admired people who can do that.
Yeah, because really that's who it would be geared to. I mean, adults could get it and read it because they think it would look good. I actually have one granddaughter. She's my own grandchild. She's going to art school right now. She's she can really draw. She,
how old is she?
I told her about the story a little bit. Her eyes lit up like big saucers, right? big plates.
How old
and
is she?
She's 18.
You should have her do it.
Oh, I will. Oh, yeah. She's going to SCAD. I'm sure you've heard of SCAD in Savannah. You know, it's art students and design. But it's really funny. I have to tell you that she didn't think she could go. She didn't think she could do it. She got a scholarship, and we sat down, and I said, why? She says, well, listen to this. I'm not going to be as good as everybody else. I said, so what? And I said, who says he or she is better than you, okay? And I told her the story about when I went to beauty school in Detroit by myself. I had to take two buses in downtown Detroit. Oh, talk about horror that was down there. I did it. And she said, well, how did you feel? I said, I had my own thing going. I mean, sure, maybe I couldn't style these really big, huge hairstyles, but I was good at everything. I was good, and I got a job when I got out. They sent me to Wayne State University to show what being in a beauty school was like. They chose me as one of them because I could do a variety of things. I wasn't just a hairstylist, or I couldn't just do coloring. You know what I'm saying? And she sat there and she said, really? I said, yes, really. Go for a semester. She came. She got all A's, by the way, and I'm tooting my horn about it because I'm so proud of her. But she said to me, to her dad and to me, it was my son, of course, she said, Dad, I have to thank you, but I really have to thank Graham. She calls me Graham. She said, because she showed me something. All of a sudden, I realized I could do it. I could try. I said, that's all I want you to do is try. Do a semester, try. It's not cheap. But, I mean, she did get money for it, but I said, just try, and you should see what she's doing. I mean, it's amazing what she's doing. And so she would be perfect as an illustrator. She really would. She freehands anything you want.
So Graham, listen.
Graham.
She also
calls me Grambo. I wonder why.
But she needs to, if it's like any art school I've ever had any connection with, she needs to build a portfolio and doing illustrations of your.
Yeah.
But she's, you know, you can always add to it. Doing illustrations for your stories.
Yes,
this
she
would
could.
Work for her and you together, especially if you get something published with her as the illustrator.
Yes.
So, all right, I'll stop on that. But.
No. It's really good. I want to mention your site. I mean, time is slipping by, but we still have time. But your site is rabbirami.com. It's RABBIRAMI.com. Go there, and you look like a typical rabbi in your one picture.
Yeah.
I wouldn't expect you to look anything different. But, you know, I thought about when I was going to talk to you, and they're not really interviews, we just talk, and that's why everybody likes them. But I thought to myself, oh, gosh, you know, what are we going to talk about? And then I sat down, I went outside, and I looked out, and I thought, oh, come on, spirituality, there's plenty to talk about. He's going to be a source of information, a wealth of information, and I'm going to be able to expound on it and add to it. And, I mean, it was such an honor, really, when Sarah said, I want you to talk to him. And I'm thinking, oh, of all the people, why? But did you hesitate to be on my show? I want to ask you that.
No. No, I trust Sarah.
Oh, Sarah's beautiful. She's a beautiful person. We text each other, and we're hilarious, you know, and she's a delight. She's a good soul, that one, a really good soul.
Yeah,
and,
absolutely.
She'll say to me, okay, I have your book, by the way. She says, I'm sending you a book. Well, I end up getting 5 books. And then she'll write me, now I want you to talk to each one of these people on your radio show. And you were one of them. I said, okay. She said, you'll do great. I mean, I'm smiling. I'm smiling inside talking to you because you just resonate with me. There's just something about when you – it's just like when I talk to some of these monks and this one man, you know, we were talking about Jerusalem. I said, I want to go there. He said, why? I said, well, I'll tell you why. I said, I want to walk the steps that Jesus walked. He said, but why? I said, well – for one thing, he appeared to me in not the tail end of taking care of my husband, but it was at an important time when I had locked myself in the bathroom so I wouldn't get beaten to death. He appeared. I'm going to tell you this. I just saw his feet and I saw the bottom of his robe and I knew who it was. I just knew. And as soon as I recognized it was him, because I was sobbing, I got up. I was good to go. I never did that again. But I said to him, I said, you know, I want to go there because I feel, and you can believe in other lifetimes if you want or not, I feel I was there with him. But what I was doing was gathering the people to stop it because that's my personality. I mean, I'll talk about Joan of Arc, talk about whatever you want. I would be at the forefront. Come on, come on, come on. We got to stop this. And one time I didn't hear him, but I got the sense of, he said to me, no, I don't want you to do that. I don't want you to, you'll die. And I don't want you to die. I'm doing this for everyone. I'm doing this because this is what I'm supposed to do. And he said to me, I want you to back away, walk down that hill, back away and stop. Don't do it. I don't want you to. I just feel that
did
I was
you ever
there.
Die?
Huh?
Have you ever been?
No. But he told me, he said, what a spiritual awakening you will have. I said, I'm telling you, I know. I already know it. I already know it. I'm going to feel first of all, like I've been there before. I mean, I have this in my head, I know. And you know, I don't know an awful lot. I mean, I know a lot about being a Catholic and that kind of stuff, you know. But this is different. This is different. And I find myself now watching stuff about history. I never cared about history before. Never, never, never. Yeah, as a young woman, no. I'm not an old woman, but you know what I'm saying? In high school, oh, that's boring. I don't want to learn about that. What do I don't learn about Egypt for? But I find myself watching everything I can get hold of. And there's always a reason for things. And I'm absorbing it all, but I would love to go to Jerusalem. I really would. That would make me feel so good. I just know. Have you been there?
Yeah, many times.
Oh. And what are your – if you were going to say something to me, well, Natalie, what would you tell me? What would you say, you really need to do this? This is so important. I did it, and you need to do it. What would you tell me?
Oh, about if you go there?
Mm-hmm.
I think, I mean, as from what you've been saying on the show, I think definitely you follow the Via Dolorosa. I think you go into the Church of the Holy Sepulchre and you climb the steps that take you up to what they think is Golgotha, where he was crucified. You go to the slab where his body was laid out and washed.
Yep.
I mean, there's just amazing energy in these
places. That's what I would want to do.
Yeah, and you make sure you go to Nazareth and you sit at Miriam's well and pray to the Divine Mother. Those are the two things I'd say you should do.
And I believe you. If I ever get the chance, I always say if my ship comes in, but then I want to go to Africa too. But I would go there. I would go there. I have a calling to go there, I think. I really do. And I don't, come from going to Catholic Church. It didn't come from there at all. It came later on in my life. It just, probably because of my husband and what I had to endure. But there's always a purpose. And everybody said to me, this really close friend, God said enough, or Jesus said enough is enough. She's done enough. And it happened right after that. And that's the truth. And I thought he was going to kill me. One day I thought.
I'm glad he didn't.
Right. And not only that, I was so quick at going into rooms that had locks. But it was, if you've ever been around somebody who has Alzheimer's a really bad way, they will break through anything. But he couldn't. He would stop. He'd try, but he would stop. And I don't know if something stopped him. And then I'd find him sitting outside on the floor waiting for me to come out. So I was blessed thousands of times every single day by that. I'm telling you, it was. But, yeah, I'm glad he didn't, too, because look what I'm doing. I have so many things to do. I have a caller here. I don't know what who this person is, but I think they called before. Hold on a minute, okay? Let me see if they want to just say something. Hi, you're live on the air with Natalie and the Rabbi. Can I help you? Hello? Okay, I guess not. Anyways, but I'm glad I didn't get. Oh yeah, you know, I don't even say this, 10 more years. I just feel like right now in my life, and you probably won't think this strange, but I feel like I'm in my 30s with all my energy and all my wisdom that I didn't have then. I have it now. So I know there's a reason for it all. I know there's work to be done. And I love life, and I love people, and I so loved having you on my show. You have no idea. It's just such an honor because you have a lot of wisdom.
It was a pleasure.
You know, it's just...
It was a pleasure.
I mean, we've talked and talked and talked, right? Did we stop? No.
Yeah.
No.
That's what we plan to do.
That's
so,
right.
Thank you
that's
very much for having me.
And thank you for the compliment on my cards. That makes me feel really good. That's like a kudo, you know. It makes you, when somebody looks at something and says, oh, these are fantastic. Look at these colors. These are beautiful. And you ask me what's different about them, and I told you. And they are different. First of all, they're coming from me. And I oversaw the whole thing, and I'm glad. And I'll tell my granddaughter what you said. She's got to do the illustrations. She's going to love that. Thank you so much. You have an awesome day. And everybody, I'm glad that you're going to be listening in. And, of course, it's recorded, so it will go off on Twitter. And then Candy, who does online marketing, she will run it off all over the place. She puts it on Facebook. She puts it on my Instagram for the magazine and all that kind of stuff. I'm just everywhere. And I'm grateful to be able to still be talking and thinking and working. And it's a beautiful world. I want to tell everybody that. It's a beautiful world. Look outside. It's a beautiful world. And if you need any kind of help, you can always reach me, starscast@mysticlivingtoday.com. I'll be happy to talk to you. I think I want to tell everybody we're going to make it. The world is going to continue, and better things are coming. I just know, and I'm sure the rabbi does too. You just cannot give up. Don't ever give up. Don't ever lose your way. No matter what, I don't care what it is, don't, you know. Go out and feed the ducks. Go out and feed the birds. Go do something. Give of yourself. Do something for someone, and don't put a price tag on it. That's what I do. That's what my life is about. I do all of this, and I don't get paid for it. I don't make a weekly salary. I do it because I love it. I love it more than anything. So with that, I will say bye, and everybody have an awesome day. Now, I don't have a show until, let me see. Oh, I have one on the 14th of December. Sometimes I take little breaks here and there And sometimes I don't. It just depends. But, you know, you'll have to watch what's coming across on Facebook and on Blog Talk Radio. That Mike Candy always announces it, and there's a beautiful show page and everything. And I want to thank the rabbi again, because I know he's still on and he's listening and smiling and probably feeling really good. I hope so. I hope I made your day. You made my day, I know. And with that, we're going to close out the show here. So I will see you in 2 weeks. And I have another awesome guest. I keep getting more and more of the different spiritual people, people that do all kinds of things. And they come to me. I don't seek them out. It's the publicist. And I want to thank Sarah, who brought the rabbi to me. It's just beautiful. And with that, you know, we always end the show with Free to Love by Gabby Ray. Makes you feel good. It leaves you upbeat, and you can feel good about everything. And remember, it's a beautiful world. And believe in things you cannot see. They really are there. Here we go.
If everyone could be who they were really meant to be, without limitations, discrimination, this world could show all its colors. So get the chip off your shoulder.
Have a great week, and I'll see you in 2 weeks. And remember, believe in things you cannot see. They really are there.